Welcome to part two of our interview with Dale Kaczmarek about the Haunted Lincoln Theater and ghost hunting. Dale has been in the field of paranormal research for more than 40 years now. One of the most long and storied careers of someone who has been so heavily involved and has seen the research change over many decades. With the new technology that's out there, obviously there's a lot of real exciting things from the Kinect type camera to just being able to get images instantly and not have to wait for anything to be developed. What do you put more weight on as far as evidence, as far as being more likely to be solid evidence? We were speaking earlier about EVPs, and every medium, I suppose, has its own answer to that question, but EVPs, back where it was simply either caught on tape or caught digitally, but it was raw air. It was basically just raw, dead air. You're asking a question to it, and something comes up on the recording. That versus a spirit box where it's scanning a radio and it's pulling words. And sometimes those words make sense and they correlate to what's going on, and sometimes they don't whatsoever. So that's where you can kind of get the argument of, well, it was luck this time. What do you put more weight on? The more traditional, less manipulated research equipment, or the stuff that is out there today that is basically potentially a playground for spirits to play with? And you just hope that it is, in fact, a spirit of some sort that is manipulating it and not just randomness.
That's a good question. Both, I have okay. to say, actually. It's really hard for me to differentiate between the two. Obviously, the traditional EVPs is when you would ask the question, you leave some blank space, you ask a question, you leave some blank space, and so forth and so on. And then later on, a few days from now, a week from now, you go back and you review your session and, oh, hey, got an answer, or you got a disembodied voice, or you got a noise in the background or something. To me, that's great, but mm-hmm. it's not two-way communication. It's a one-sided communication. You're asking a question, you don't hear the response until it plays back later. And that's the idea that digital recorders encompass a wide variety of frequencies that are above and beyond our range of hearing. A normal range of hearing is between 20 hertz and 20,000 hertz. Anything below 20 hertz would be infrasound. Anything above 20,000 would be ultrasound. And a lot of times EVPs fall in those sections, unless it's a disembodied voice, which would be it's inaudible. We really like the real-time devices, the obelisk, especially in phonetic mode, that allows them to form their own words. You're not using the dictionary mode that has the 4,000 program words, which in effect, you ask the question, the spirits are able to manipulate the device and pull out the appropriate word out of the dictionary. In the phonetic mode, it can allow them to form the puts together the vowels and consonants to form words and then form those words into entire sentences. We've had entire sentences come through the obelisk and phonetic wow. mode, which is undeniable because mm-hmm. you've got something. You're not connected to a radio. You're not connected to any other type of media. It's spirits or some energy physically manipulating the sound synthesizer in the device to create words. Yeah. That's one of the most exciting things we do. We go one step beyond that. Even when we use our ghost boxes in the past, the first one that came out, I think, was the Shack Hack. You can go to Radio Shack and you can create your own, version of that, which is really kind of slow scanning and you can pick up a lot of radio feedback. And then it went from the SB7, the spirit box, which is not really loud. You have to have an external speaker and it does scan pretty fast. But again, you have a lot of radio stuff that comes through. Now, again, my whole idea when I was first involved or introduced to what was then called spirit boxes or mini boxes or Frank's boxes or Joe's boxes or whatever they used to be called.
Sure.
There was a whole, I think Frank Sumption was the first one that came across what they used to call Frank's boxes. There was a number of different designs. But I was very skeptical because my first thing was that you're scanning radio.
Yeah.
AM, FM, very, very fast, mind you. And you're going to get responses that come through the radio. So I was very skeptical about that until I saw it in action and I began to experiment with it. In fact, using some of Rosemary Ellen Guiley's early mini boxes in places like Waverly Hills, where we got things that came through that says, need medical care. I need therapy. That came through very clear voices. And I'm going, wow, you're at a facility that thousands of people die from tuberculosis, and those kind of responses come through.
Yeah.
So then I began to think, well, maybe there's something more to this. So we began experimenting with this, and that's it progressed into what's called an SB11, which is louder, has like two, it's like having two SB7s in there, and you can actually disconnect from the antenna. So then that's even greater, because now, in theory, you're not supposedly getting a lot of radio feedback unless you're close to a very strong receiver,
sure.
In which case you're still going to get some radio stuff. It progressed from there into what we call the mini portal, which we use in SB7, but we're able to then get rid of all that scanning sound in there, and only the voices come through. Now we're getting somewhere, because now you're in the past, sometimes very slow, subtle voices would come through, and because of the scanning, you wouldn't be able to hear that. Now the voices only came through. Our biggest thing now that we've been using now is an application. And I was very skeptical about applications, you know, because again, applications like Ghost Radar and all those things, they're for entertainment purposes, pretty much.
Yeah.
This one, called the Phasma Box from ExtremeSenses.com, uses sound banks and internet radio mixed along with a reverb and echo effect. And we have gotten some of the most amazing responses from this application. I'll give you just two quick examples here. One, we were in a cemetery in the middle of nowhere. We had, there was just a sign, no grave markers. It was in McConaughey Cemetery in Goshen, Indiana. We asked a question, and you can go to our website and hear this very clearly. How many graves are here? There was a short pause, and a very clear voice came through and says, more than 100.
Wow.
And we all immediately repeat it, more than 100, did you see? And we're all excited. One of the most interesting ones, we were down in the Elgin Casket Factory recently. It's a kind of a play, it's an old factory that used to build caskets in, haunted. They walk people through, especially to do these horror scare type of walkthroughs. They have, you know, fake fuse boxes on the wall that are not hooked up. They're there for effect. We were using a Kinect system, an SLS camera. One of my researchers saw a stick figure manipulating or playing with that box. And I go, that's pretty amazing. So we said, hey, if you're right there, can you touch that box? Turn one of those switches on. There's a short pause, and it says, it doesn't work.
Pretty
now,
direct.
When you get responses like that,
yeah.
I mean, how can you say that this is something coming through the radio,
sure.
Something coming through a sound bank or an internet radio? You know, there can be a lot of garbly goop that comes through, even on the Ovilus, dictionary mode, in phonetic mode. Some of these ghost boxes, a lot of stuff that comes through that doesn't make sense. And I'd like to kind of chalk it up to the spirits trying to figure out what these devices are.
Sure.
And trying to, it's like giving a child a new toy, mm-hmm. and saying, okay, play with this toy. They got to learn how to play with it and manipulate it. The same with the spirit. And eventually initially you might have some junk that comes through, you know, just random words and so forth. And then later on, as they begin to say, oh, this is how it works. I park my energy into it somehow and I get a response. And then you start getting intelligent response. So I guess the long-winded question to your question would be, I like both.
Okay.
But the newer devices, at least you're able to hold a conversation because you can hear the response and then build upon that response.
Which is very interesting. And that's something I can't believe that we're even able to do today, but I do believe it. I've seen it. I've heard it from so many investigators, and that to me is one of the most compelling things out there in ghost hunting technology today. What would you say is one of the most reliable pieces of equipment that you're using out there in the field today to get a response? If there's something, in fact, there to respond to you.
Well, I would have to say right now would be the Phasma Box. The Phasma Box we've been using quite a bit now for the past about a year. And There's actually several versions of this device, or several different versions. We picked up another one called Armenia. And if you go to extremesenses.com, I hate to give a plug, but it's a great site. People should check it out. The applications are only $14.95 and less, so they're very affordable for most people. Mm-hmm. This Armenia, it has a bank for negative responses, a bank for positive responses. If the response comes through, you hear it, and it also displays it on the screen like an obelisk does. The weird part is there's a section in the middle has a video, and it cycles through faces. Supposedly what this does is gives you the emotions of the ghost at the time. Now, I'm a little skeptical about that. If you go to the site, they actually have a YouTube video, and he's asking the question, are you happy? Are you sad? And then a face will show up, it's smiling, it's pouting, or whatever. That's pretty amazing stuff. So we use that a lot, and we still use the obelisk quite a bit. We do get a lot of responses through the obelisk. We start with dictionary mode first to see if anything comes through, because in the dictionary mode, we're able to see the words that come through. In phonetic mode, we can't use the actual generator to show that, so we have to hopefully be able to catch that in real time and then respond to it if it's that clear, or in some cases, later on, listen to it and then, you know, extract, you know, that EVP.
Sure. Tell me about in your investigations, and we can go beyond here, the theater. Obviously, you've done quite a bit in the world of investigating. What to you has been one of, and I say this because it seems to be one of the most interesting questions we ever ask, is what was one of the darkest places you've ever gone into, and what occurred there that made you feel that this is really kind of borderline, I don't know if I want to go here again, dark?
First of all, I should probably say that we screen our cases very, very carefully to make sure that what we're getting involved with is, negative, positive, whatever you want to call it.
Sure.
And in many cases, we have actually turned down cases which we feel that is just too negative for us.
Yeah.
Because the real possibility that bringing a team in, the team could become attacked in some way. The ghost could, in some cases, or the dark entities, retaliate against their presence, our presence being there. Mm-hmm. But with that being said, there have been a few places, some mental institutions, Trans-Allegheny for one, Randolph County Infirmary in Indiana, which, again, these were all either county poor farms or state mental institutions at one time.
Yeah.
And you have to remember what went on in these places back at the time when they were brand new.
Sure.
The archaic forms of mental health, how these patients were abused and everything. So I'm not going to say that these are, demons we're dealing with, but these are spirits that are very negative because of the way they were treated.
Sure.
My theory has always been, if you're a negative person in life, most likely if you come back as a ghost, you're going to be a negative person. It's your demeanor. It's your personality.
Sure.
So when we talk to these or try to elicit responses, sometimes we do get explicatives that come through. In some cases, one place where we were down in Red Bowling Springs, Tennessee, we were in a cave called Leonard's Cave. We actually had a K2 meter, which was wedged inside of a wall, which reacted to our questions, and then was flung out of the wall towards us. And we have that on video. So in some cases, spirits can be negative to you. Always try to tell people that, again, for the most part, the generic term ghost that we used quite often, we're most often dealing with people that have simply passed on, and they're hanging around because they don't realize that they have passed on, or in some cases trying to make a connection to the physical world again, even though they're not of the physical world anymore. They're kind of in the in between. Mm-hmm. So sometimes you do get kind of negative responses or responses that tend to be maybe not what you're expecting. But it's not something to be frightened about. I think it's It's just the demeanor of the person.
What are the type of cases that you've turned down where you said, yeah, I'd love, you know, I want you to get help and I want you to find some peace here, but this is beyond, what's your line that you don't cross where you say, I can't do this, but it's beyond us?
Well, we do a regular interview process. I mean, basically, I like to have people tell their whole story, their history in their own words. So I don't ask a lot of leading questions. I don't try to get a person to where they want to need to embellish or sensationalize their story. So I let them tell their story, and then I kind of go back and fill in the blanks, and I'll ask specific questions. I got a 4 or 5 page questionnaire that I go through, and these are things that are very relevant that we've dealt with in the past, and things that we won't cross the line with is if there had been, for the most part, if there's been some dark activity in the building, if there's been reports of rituals, black magic, satanic stuff, Ouija boards and seances, you know, they're on the fringe, okay? Because again, with those things, it's an uncontrolled type of communication, especially for people that are not, don't know what they're doing. They sit around, they play with a Ouija board, they play with a seance, they leave doors open afterwards, and they can invite things in that are maybe not so good. They might say it's Aunt Helen or Uncle Joe, but it's probably something else.
Sure.
So we ask these type of questions, and we make sure that, and then especially if there's any violence that's being perpetrated on people that are in, if people are being physically attacked, if they're being scratched, if there's damage to the property, if there's a very heavy presence of feeling inside there, these are areas that we may not necessarily want to delve into, because if they're already having problems, us coming in there could exacerbate that even more, and then our team could come under attack. So usually at that point, I steer people towards, first of all, I might say the clergy, and that's always a good thing. If you're a religious person, maybe have a priest or a rabbi or a minister come in and do a simple house cleansing or a blessing. You don't have to tell them that you think the place is haunted. Just tell them you want the house blessed. Because a lot of priests, you know, may not come in if they think it's the ghost there. Or they might say, oh, okay, these people are crazy. There's still that stigma, even though it's the 21st century. And then if that doesn't work, of course, you know, you can always steer. If you think it's a more negative, you get somebody more seasoned in demonology, or a shaman or somebody who might be able to come in. And that's where, you know, it gets to the point where it could be something extreme.
Sure.
So our the way we interview people and the way we elicit information from it is the final determination of whether or not we're going to actually accept the case.
Mm-hmm. That's understandable, and so for example, I'm not sure if you're familiar with a place. The location eludes me. I believe it's in Ohio, but I could be completely wrong. House of Wills, the funeral home. Are you familiar?
Yes, we've been there.
Oh, you have. I was going to say, yes. Is that place off of your list of places that you would investigate?
Well, we didn't actually investigate it, but we were there because we were investigating some other places. We were in Madison Seminary, which is in Madison, which is not too far from the Cleveland area.
Okay.
And we just had to stop in and see this place. I had seen it on TV before.
Yeah.
I mean, I had heard about that. I'd heard some of the reports. That would be an area along with Saddamsville Rectory, if that kind of rings a bell too. That was one in Ohio too that was very negative, according to, again, these are reports on these reality TV shows.
Sure.
This is something we need to address, is the reality TV shows and the people that are around there, these investigators, they may be legitimate investigators, but they're under the constraint of these reality TV show concepts.
Mm-hmm.
And to say that this is a very negative thing, and I won't even mention the name of some of these shows, but they started off investigating regular ghosts, and now everything they investigate now is demons,
sure,
diabolical. They're becoming attacked, they're becoming possessed. That's not the norm for investigations, unless you're looking for that stuff, like attracts like. But we've been to many places that have been on these reality TV shows, and we've gotten absolutely nothing. There was no negativity. I didn't feel oppressed. I didn't feel like there was pressure. We had some EVPs and stuff that were relevant, responses, direct responses. But again, nothing negative. And I think then that's simply the reality of TV. So I tell people when they watch these television shows, season it with a little bit of salt. because basically it's there for entertainment. I watch them to this day, not so much for what the investigators are doing, but where they're going.
Sure.
Just to get ideas for places that we might want to look into. But
the best way to get a ghost at some of those locations is to have a producer with you with a deadline. That's how you're going to get immediate activity. If that ghost knows that there's a producer there that has a deadline to meet, boom, it's on.
Absolutely. You know, unfortunately, I hate to say it, but I mean, we all know that many of these TV shows, they do doctor up their evidence a little bit.
Sure.
Unfortunately. And that's really a shame. And that's why I will never be on a TV show. I never have I've been offered my own TV show in the past. And the contracts and what was sent to me, I said, I'm not going to put aside and jeopardize 40 some years of my credibility to be on a TV show where if I don't get anything, I have to doctor up the evidence and say, well, yeah, we got this, but it really was really somebody talking in the background.
Sure.
You know, that's what people need to look for when they watch these TV shows. Watch them for entertainment purposes. I mean, they are entertaining. Now, I will say that some of the responses they get through the Ovilus and the Ghost Box, you know, unless they've somehow, you know, edited them in to, you know, fit that particular question, that's the responses that come through these devices. So you might actually have legitimate evidence there. But again, having the going everywhere and having being attacked by something everywhere you go is a bit far-fetched.
Sure. That wraps up part two of our interview with Dale Kaczmarek. Thank you so much, Dale, for being on the program today. Until next time, for the Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.